Hello and welcome to Scoppy Radio. My name is Daniel Johansson.
And I'm Maureen Smith.
And we've got a special one for you today. We're here with Audrey Q. Snyder of Oddpod and her recently released track, Witch, and upcoming EP. Do you have a title yet?
Yes, Restless Lady.
Cool. Cool.
You guys have the best radio voices, by the way. I know this isn't like radio, but it's sort of like radio, like 2.0.
No, I mean, that's kind of what we're going for.
Yeah. Ever since I was a little kid, my mom was always like, Maureen, you've got to do voiceovers.
Yeah.
I just like the idea of building like a weird radical radio station is really fun to me. In like a digital age where it's not actually a radio feed, it's just a podcast.
Yeah.
Which is basically, we did it.
I see you guys like constructing an entire like media empire out of Scappy Mag.
That is sick. The dream.
Yeah, like I see that happening.
That's the move. And like, you know, it mostly just being all the folks that I know are amazing individuals doing dope work that should be running things and not, you know... I don't know what is making me go this direction, and I'm really sorry. We can, like, cut it out. But, like, I keep thinking about, like, just with all the sexual harassment stuff that's going on.
Oh, yeah.
The biggest thing that I'm really happy about as we grow is that I'm, like, more and more becoming the minority in the Scoppy staff thing that we have going.
I see what you're saying.
Which is great.
Yeah. And that I'm handling most of the communication with people.
Yes.
Even though... No, I was about to make a joke that I'm not going to make. It would be inappropriate, and I'm not going to fucking joke about it.
Yeah. It's a fun time. I love... So we've had a few episodes with other people that also make podcasts, and I just love how fun and kind of, like, comfortable they get right away. Because it's like...
I feel like, I'm not... I love interviewing people for podcasts, but also, like, I feel a little bit more relaxed just, like, being interviewed because I'm not like, okay, I gotta, like, yeah. Like, I have, like, my list of questions ready.
Oh, you make a list?
I have questions ahead of time, and then I know, like, based on how the conversation goes that, like, we'll branch off into, like, other sub-questions.
For sure.
Oh.
Yeah, so I'm always, like... I probably way overthink it, is what's happening.
I mean, whatever tools you need. So tell me, how long have you been doing Oddpod?
Okay, so I only, like, the first episode was released this past January, like, about mid-month, something like that. I started interviewing people. Like, I did my first two interviews, right before the end of 2016, just because I wanted a lot of, like, lead time to figure out how to, like, edit things and literally just how to because I didn't know the technical side of it
at all,
like having like an RSS feed and all that sort of stuff, and I was like, I had to do all this reading online. I was like, I don't know what I'm doing, and I still don't know a lot about what I'm doing, but I'm just sort of like as my like old cello teacher would say, I'm like just running into poles and shit, just like figuring things out as I go.
Yeah, and I want to make clear that my laughing is not at you; it's at the like.
Oh, no,
I
no.
totally know. Yeah, like, what am I doing? What are we doing? Anyway.
Yeah, it was definitely not in my original job description. But now I do this.
No, our genesis, we recorded an episode in, like, May of 2016.
Mm-hmm.
And we sat on that recording until February of 2017.
Oh, my gosh.
And then Daniel spent two kind of hair... I left a job and then had 6 weeks of unemployment.
Whoa.
Where I had been working an office job and I was miserable and was working like 55 hours a week.
Ugh.
And then all of a sudden I had nothing.
Right. And you're like, oh my God.
And so I was just like...
That's the podcast move.
It
That's
was just
the,
like
the time you start a podcast.
It was
Absolutely.
Just like...
Yeah.
It was like couch city.
Yeah.
Like, it was crazy.
I got the idea to start my podcast when I was on my way back from a failed month-long venture in Los Angeles.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. No, I tried to move to L.A. after I finished, like, a six-month tour, like, with Bridges of Madison County. I finished the tour, and then I was like, I'm going to move to L.A. This is a good idea. And then So I drove out there. I drove, it was like 3,000 miles or something. Like, not quite 3,000 miles, but it's a trek. You drove out there. I was there for a month, and then, like, nothing was going right. Nothing was going right. I was just hemorrhaging money. It was mm-hmm. awful. And there were a lot of things I could have done differently, too.
And then it was 2020.
Yeah. And I was on my way back, and people had, like, recommended, podcasts for me on the way back, and I had never been a huge podcast listener.
Mm-hmm.
And so on the way back, I'm listening to all these podcasts, and I was like, this is a great, like, medium. I love this. I love mm-hmm. podcasts. Like, I want to do a podcast. And so then I got back, and I, like, began making plans.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just coming back and, like, feeling like a failure and living with my parents and just, like, not having enough to do. I was like, well, I guess I'll start this podcast now mm-hmm. and, like, meet people, and this will be great. So that's how it started.
That's what I love that about it. And I think we were talking with Fletcher Pearson about this, who does Some Small Magic, which I recommend because it's kind of like the I'd love to live in a world. It's basically like the theater equivalent of Odd Pod, which mm-hmm. is really cool. It's a lot of folks that are making new theater works and stuff like that. But we were talking with him about, I forgot where we were. Now I just forgot where we were going, where I was going with this already.
It's that time of day.
Well, here's the other thing. Yeah, it really is. Here's the other thing I really am curious about. So, like, where do you host your podcast? And, like, where's your RSS feed for anyone that's
new to the podcast? It's okay. So I do it. How do I do it?
Everybody does it differently. I'm finding.
I do it on my website, like on cool. a hidden page on my website.
Very cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it was, like I said, bumping into poles and shit. I was like, oh, I think I can, like, there's a blog, because I do my website through Bandzoogle, and they have sort of a blog option, and, like, sort of, like, one side of the blog option is posting podcasts.
Cool.
Instead of text, so.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we wanted to make sure to do it in a way that was, like, I don't think any website we had would let you do it without it being like a premium thing.
Oh, yeah.
So we're using,
you know, my personal website is hosted on WordPress. I probably could have.
No, I'm
I did end up having to, like, I mean, I was already paying for my website, but then at a certain point, just with the number of episodes right. that I had, I did have to sort of, like, go up to the next sort of level.
Right. Well, that's the same thing with, like, SoundCloud.
Right.
Where, like,
right.
you can do up to, like, I think it's like 300 minutes or something like that. Mm-hmm. We're using the, like, federal national internet archive.
Oh.
It's all open source pieces of data.
Whoa. Yeah. And it's free to upload, and there's no limit.
Oh,
but
that's amazing.
It's a weird website to navigate.
But okay. Basically, once you upload it, you can't delete it, and it is now
You can delete parts of the file, but you can't get rid of the post.
Once things are out on the internet, like, it's still, it's like,
yeah.
Well, yeah. So this is something that I've, like, been a little worried about this, and I brought this up in a meeting with Zach, our designer, so it's not like I'm just, like, dropping a bomb on Daniel or something, but, like, a little piece of me mm-hmm. is a little bit worried that somebody's just gonna, like, happen upon our recordings, mm-hmm. and because they're open source, just, like, take them.
Mm.
Oh, yeah, I don't, what would they do with it, though?
I don't know,
start
a podcast?
Of our podcast, like,
oh my god, that would be so. That would be very bizarre and very douchey.
Yeah, But then it'd be us, so, like,
You know, I haven't thought through the logistics. Yeah. I'm not a bad person. I'm not going around stealing.
You're not trying to steal podcast recording, but you're, like, trying to put yourself in the mindset of someone who might be a shitty person
who would, like, scour archive.org and be like. Be like, haha, what do I do with all this open source data?
Yeah.
Sell it to Russia. I don't know.
Okay.
But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that'll show them.
Oh my god.
All right. So, talking about prep for interviews, we didn't We didn't have any questions written down.
That's fine.
Well, that's the thing is we never do.
Yeah.
You guys are way better at like flying by the seat of your pants also. Like, and it never seems like you're flying by the seat of your pants. Like, it just like, I don't know, it feels very organic. I just get like very nervous, and I'm the kind of person who like, if I don't have things like...
Well, the thing is, we do research. Mm-hmm. We do research. Like, there, whenever, unless it's someone who we like know exactly what they're coming on for, and we're like familiar with the project. Mm-hmm. But like, our last episode, Jamie Schreiner, mm-hmm. She was promoting her one woman show, Wife Material, and I knew nothing about it. She right. mm-hmm. she contacted us and was like, "I want to promote the show," and I was like, "Awesome! Oh. Like, we'd love to talk to you." But I didn't know anything about it, and mm-hmm. so we like did research and yeah. like read up about it and read up about, you know, she has a unique situation. And so, you know, we didn't go into that one blind because that would have been right, the right. worst.
No, I'm sure you don't go. I would never think that you went into stuff yeah. blind. I just, like, I'm just a crazy person and have to have things, like, written down or else I'll, like, freak out.
I don't think you're that crazy. I just think it...
I just think that we're...
You guys have your own great style.
I keep
style.
Trying to not...
You have your own great style.
Yeah. It has to do with format, I think.
Right.
I think that you've really defined a more structured format, which I think is important. And I'm curious... Well, because, like, you know, like, for us, it's just, like, we're going to record whatever the fuck, and I don't edit it out.
No, I mean, like, we talk to everybody. We talk to everybody. And I think mm-hmm. that, especially with your podcast being so niche, you're mm-hmm. like, you talk to new music folks.
It's funny that you say that, because I do have a lot of new music people on, mm-hmm. but it's actually not a new music podcast. It's an all sorts of music podcast.
Well, really? Yeah, I'm curious. So what...
Yeah.
I have already three. I'm curious. Tell us, what do you think about your podcast? What's your, like elevator speech for your podcast? Yeah.
It's, the whole thing is just, I interview people who, just people who are a part of the Chicago music community, who are doing unique and interesting things. So that can include it's mostly performers, educators, sometimes administrators, like Hugo Seda, like he still plays and he still performs and stuff, but a lot of what we talked about had to do with like what he does with like University of Chicago Presents, like mm-hmm. what he does as an administrator. And a lot of, usually the people that I have on are involved in like a number of different things. Mm-hmm. And my goal going, like, it, and it's sort of, it changes from day to day, sort of what I, like, my goals for the podcast.
For sure.
But one of the things that I think I sort of had in the back of my head going into it was, you know, I wanted to have examples of people who are, they're making a living in music and they're doing interesting things, and they may not, but they're not necessarily at the level of, like, you know, and of course, like, because I'm, like, very much a new music cellist, like, the new music people come to mind first, like, 8th Blackbird and like, Spectral and Third Coast, like, they're not at that level to where, like, they're famous or anything, but they're still really good examples of people who are, like, being successful musicians.
For sure.
It's just not necessarily, like, glitzy, you know?
Yeah. I'm really interested in that because, we do not need to go into the details of this, but there was like a flare up. I shared a post from a new music person about mm-hmm. something that the opera community was really like worked up about.
Oh.
And, it's what it's made me think a lot about. And I'm not going to get into the details of the, it was specifically about this like high note thing that like a bunch of opera singers were.
Oh yeah, I saw whisperings of that.
Yeah, yeah. But what it made me think a lot about is kind of where the lines of niches lie to some extent.
Right.
And I think that kind of what, like, it's easy for I love new music. I love going to new music shows. I don't do a lot of it.
Mm-hmm.
Would love to do more of it. But my point being is that I definitely feel more of like an outsider to the scene. And I think that what you're talking about is a really important distinction, because I do think that it's not just like a person that comes to mind as like an example of this is like Christopher Narlock,
mm-hmm.
where like his programming, there is some new music stuff in there, but a lot of it is kind of really like exploring like a lot of like second Viennese school stuff, a lot of like things that have happened in the last century, it seems.
I feel like, yeah, there are a lot of, Yeah, I feel like it's important to, and I don't remember, like, there's a quote about it, too, that I can't remember. I'm not somebody who remembers quotes.
No, that's legit.
I wish I was one of those people.
No.
So people are just spouting wisdom right and left.
Yeah.
But, just, like, a focus on, like, good me. And one of the interviews that actually made me think about it too was talking to Rachel Brown from Ursa Ensemble. Mm-hmm. She was saying, like, we're not a new music group, like, we just like to play a lot of what we consider good music.
Yeah.
And new music happens to be some of that. And I don't know, that really resonated with me. So
yeah. And
what it calls to mind are radio stations that don't have a formula, or not that they don't have a formula, but that they play like the 80s, 90s, and today. Yeah. Where it's not necessarily that they're an 80s station, it's not that they're a 90s station, it's not that they're a current top 40 station, it's that they play whatever good music from the 30 year, from the last 30 or so years.
And it sort of calls into question also, like, what do we consider, like, good music? Like quote, good.
Yeah. I think that in, like, the radio sphere, it's what was popular.
Yeah.
Right.
But, but what's cool about the classical realm is that on a concert, there could be, like, you know, what could be considered good, or, like, a cool, diverse program could be, like, a commission, and then, like, a lesser-known Chopin piano piece, and then, like, you know, Aaron Copland. That'd be a weird concert. But
that'd be, be far out.
Yeah. And then round it out with, like, a Mozart oboe concerto.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry. I would be really good at programming concerts, especially for not my instrument. I got to a point, so this is very tangential, but, like, extremely. When I lived in Milwaukee, I made a lot of my money singing at funerals. I sang at several funerals a week. And it got to the point, and they were all Catholic funerals.
Whoa.
And so it got to the point where if I got hired for a funeral, and someone, and I could, like, and if I was, like, talking to, like, the son of the person who died, I kind of, like, automatically would kick into, like, so, do you, like, I would immediately ask, like, so do you have the music picked out? And if there was, like, well, you know, I don't know, I would be like, all right, I'm going to program this,
this
music for you, because I don't want you picking weird shit.
Well, and also, it's like, it makes sense for a funeral. It's not like so often people haven't, like, planned. Well, sometimes they have, but usually people aren't thinking, like, oh, like, we want this particular music at this funeral. Like, it's not something that people necessarily think about.
Well, and also, a lot of them don't know, like, maybe their parents were religious, but I don't know why I'm talking about this, but it came to mind. a lot of times it was like their parents are religious and they know that it would have been important to them that they have the funeral in the church, but perhaps they are not religious.
Right.
And so they don't know the different parts of the mass.
Yeah.
And so they're like, I don't know, how about, like, If I Saw You in Heaven by Eric Clapton for the Psalm.
You're like,
and I'm like, or how about literally anything else?
Yeah. How about anything else? Oh, golly. Were you just like the funeral singer in Milwaukee, where a lot of people?
She was the
kicking it.
She was the funeral queen.
I was the funeral queen of Milwaukee.
Yeah,
that's what the dad of the kids I nannied called me, because oftentimes, like, show up.
The radio personality of Milwaukee, in fact.
Yeah.
One of the DJs of 88.9, which is, like, the major station, one of the major stations in Milwaukee.
I nannied his kids, and so I would show up to their house, like, in all black.
Right.
And he'd be like, funeral? I'd be like, yep.
It's another day, another funeral.
Yeah. It's a Polish guy.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Well, I'm gonna jump topics entirely. I wanna talk about your music.
Oh.
Because I think it's dope as fuck. And I if you haven't checked out the track by now and you're listening, you should. Because I really like what you are doing.
Oh.
In that it's
there's a cat behind you.
There are two cats. They're always really the same.
God, why are your cats so precious? I love them so much.
Oh, my God. Hi, buddy.
Oh, hey. Okay, I'm sorry.
No, you're good. I distracted my cat. You're good. I allow, like, it was, yeah. I also forgot what a question. Oh, and I also, you have a great voice too. You sing really well. Yeah. I'm kind of curious for you, like, how, what do you really kind of think of it as? I'm like struggling with putting into words, like, the kind of sound or, like, style that it is. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
In a great way. Like, I think that's. Yeah.
It's kind of a cross genre thing.
But I think. Someone said this recently, that a lot of things are going to start going that direction, because in some ways, like, there aren't a lot of textures left to discover.
Right. And there's just a lot more, like, cross-pollination.
For sure.
Than I think there has.
Cross-pollination is a good way of putting it.
For sure.
I feel like maybe Alex Ross used that or something. I don't know. Maybe.
Oh, I can't remember. Then,
I don't want to, like, wrongfully.
I take that back. You're a total hack.
I know. I suck. God. Yeah, it's, I think of it as, like, I mean, I most simply put it as, like, pop music, because mm-hmm. I, like, and certain, like, some of my songs are clearly much more inspired by, like, straight-ahead pop music than others. I think it's just, like, I've always been somebody who loved pop music and loved music with, like, a strong rhythmic mm-hmm. element to it, but I'm not a rhythm section player. Mm-hmm. Like, I happen to play a string instrument.
Yeah.
So it's this, like, this pop music that has, like, a bunch of cello in it, which is kind of bizarre. I kind of, like, sometimes was tempted to put myself in a, at least, like, adjacent category to, like, there's sort of, like, a purely instrumental group called Break of Reality with, like, three cellos and percussion. It is cool, but it's, like, the style of music that they do is not what I do. It's just similar because there's cello involved, and, like, they do covers of, like, Tool and stuff, which Tool is great, but that's not, like, what I do. And then, like, there's, like, Zoe Keating, who does a lot of, like, she also purely instrumental, like, just cello. She does a lot of stuff with loop pedal, but also, like, people have tried to tell me, like, you know what you should do is play with loop pedal, and I'm like, that wouldn't work at all, but thanks. which, I mean, I don't mean to sound, like, ungrateful at all for people's, like, you know, wanting to, like, being enthusiastic.
Right.
And wanting to talk to me for about stuff. But also I feel like people just want me to keep using more and more technology, and I'm like, but I just like to play cello. But yeah, in terms of, like, describing my music, some of my influences, I've been, like, Bjork. I could never compare myself at all in any way to Bjork, because she's just the queen. She's the other queen bee. But
Beyonce Bjork.
Yeah, like, very different, third? But she's both queen queens.
Queen bee of the North. She's queen of the North.
She is queen of the North. She's queen of the North!
Oh my God, that's so fucking good.
Queen Bjork, Queen of the North. Oh my God, she's just so great. But I've like listened to a lot of Bjork in my time. I've always.
What's your favorite album?
Oh man, that's really hard. I love Vespertine, and I love why am I blanking? Oh, Vulnicura. One of the things I love about Vulnicura is, like, I guess kind of, like, what she said about it was the fact that, you know, she's, like, you know, because she has these specific, like, musical goals for every album, and she's so, like, goal-oriented about all of them, and then Vulnicura was sort of, like, her one, at least, like, according to her, like, her one sort of, like, personal, like, breakup album, where for once she was, like, being a lot more, just like, this is kind of about me, and it was, I think she felt embarrassed about it, but she was like, it was like a thing that she had to do, and she couldn't, it was not something that could be helped, almost. And I was like, I get it, Bjork. Great. I mean, I don't get it, because I didn't, like, split up with my partner and, like, have a child, like, you know.
Give it some time, you know.
Right. Like, you know, it's a long road ahead. Right, like, a lot of things could happen.
For sure. For sure.
But yeah, I've always listened to, I love St. Vincent for a while. I love how she always had a lot of like strings on, well, not so much like lately, like she has a lot more electronics than she used to, but, but I love the, how she's a lot of times had like a lot of strings and.
Well, and I think there's something really valuable to growing into that too, potentially, and being able to be like, this is what I know I do very well. And it, this can exist in that space. But like, the loop pedal is the perfect example because like I love like don't get me wrong, like I've been super into that new guitarist that plays with loop pedals a lot, Tush Sultana, I think her name is, or something like that.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of it's very much the like carnival act of like, oh, here comes out the loop pedals, like,
yeah, it just like, I mean, I totally like, you know, I totally don't judge people who use it, but it's also just if I don't want it to be a gimmick. I don't want to use a loop pedal just for the sake of using a loop pedal. Sure. Like, look, I'm using the loop pedal. Like, right. I just don't care enough about it.
I mean, yeah, if you wanted to add, like, texture or something. Yeah, I mean, that's one of my favorite uses of loop pedal is Galen Leah. Do you know her?
I don't.
Oh, my God.
Am I missing out?
You would really like her,
so yeah. She is, she has some sort of, like, degenerative, muscular...
you might have seen.
She's, did she win Tiny Desk?
Yes.
She did.
Yes. So, I do know who you're talking
she
about.
Plays she plays violin.
I think so. But, yeah. But she plays this sort of like upright. Like
she's right. So small that she plays it like a cello.
Yeah.
And she uses loop pedal.
Yeah.
And it is haunting.
Yeah. Her just haunting. Her performance style is just very like compelling.
Yes. For sure. So we saw her live.
Really?
Yeah, she was at Scuba's.
Shuba's,
whatever. She was at...
She was at Scuba Steve's.
I was like, chill.
Scuba's. Yeah. You know what? Scuba I don't get Steve. Out a lot. I work a lot.
No, right, yeah.
You know
yeah,
what?
For sure.
Preach.
No, but she, like... You know that little, like, that little cavern-type space at Shuba's?
I think so. So, yeah.
Like, there's the bar, and then you go through the door.
Oh, yeah.
She, like, filled that. It was, like, it was crazy. It was so cool.
She seems amazing.
And that, I think, is a really cool use of loop pedal, where it's, like, you're, like,
it's like a necessary element of the music.
Yeah. It's just like creating a crazy amount of texture. It's really, really cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. She's amazing.
Yeah.
So I'm actually curious for you as a cellist and like, because the cello is such a, like, it's such a beloved instrument.
It is.
The idea, though, of like balancing it, the way that you balance it, I'm really curious.
Physically?
No, yes.
Between my knees.
Yeah, that's the move.
I actually just, like, bounce it between my knees, like, very quickly.
Yeah,
so you can't even see. It's just like a hummingbird.
Nice.
Wow, that's so impressive.
I'm totally kidding.
I'm, like, so, yeah.
Well, I actually, this is ridiculous. I saw, I'm so sorry, Daniel. I'm totally hijacking this with
you're totally cool.
You're fine.
I'll find the rest of that question later.
All right, cool. In a pile of trash. I have another tangent. I'm not going to pursue it, though. Okay, so I saw a picture of you standing with Zaffa Collective.
Yeah.
Where you were holding it
up.
And I was very impressed by that. I don't know why. Just because, like, I don't know. Like, perhaps that's dumb. But, like, because the thing is, I know how much stringed instruments cost.
Is it kind of like the thing, I'm always, as a photographer, I'm always really impressed when someone is, like, walking around with their camera in one hand. Where it's like, oh, you don't even care. Not that you don't care. Like,
she don't give a shit.
Yeah, like...
Honey Badger!
Just like swinging your cello around. Yeah.
That I do not have the upper body strength for. Believe it or not.
No, but I was just like, it was just like a very, I was like looking for like a strap. But
was I holding it kind of like the, like sort of kinda like under
your,
the bow?
Like on your hip.
Yeah, it's like you have to, I mean, yeah, it's like if you're holding it up by, it's kind of like anything else. Like if you, it's, I'm sorry, I keep starting sentences and not finishing them. But it's, you know, if you're just holding it up by the neck, like, that's a little more, that's like, this is awkward. But if it just, if you hold it in certain places, it's not, like, totally burdensome. Mm-hmm. And also, it probably looks heavier than it is. Because, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, that totally makes sense.
I don't know. I guess what I'm getting at is that it created kind of like a cool sense of intimacy with it. Like, it was clearly like,
instead of it like here's me, here's my cello, it's like part of
Exactly. Like, yeah. You spend enough time in contact with your cello that you know that if you hold it like this, it just seemed like it. Like, if I were to replicate that with a cello. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be able to pose for a picture because I would be like, there's a cello on my hip. But what was cool about it, and what I think is cool about instrumentalists in general, is they develop such, like, a relationship to that inanimate object.
For sure.
Such that there's, a physical comfortability that I think is really cool to see.
Can I do a terrible question thing and ask you a question, Maureen? This is a terrible interview for this reason. But have you ever, picked up and held a cello? Like, and had to... Someone once asked me to take their cello to another room for them or something like that. Or, like, bring their cello to a room for them. And I remember picking it up and just being so afraid. Like, and I remember then...
Was it, like, in a case? Or was it just...
No, it was... I don't... Cello? I'm trying to remember what the context was. Like, maybe it was, like, I don't know. But, and I remember at a certain point I was like, oh, I gotta put this down somehow. And I was like, I realized that I never paid attention to, like, how people put cellos on the ground.
Yeah, and it's just, I don't even think about it. I mean, I still, like, don't get me wrong, I still whack my cello on things all the time. It's terrible, and I feel bad, and I want to, like, kiss my cello and, like, apologize to it. But for them, it is funny how, like, I don't even think about it anymore. Like, you just get used to, like, how something, like, feels and like, how to wield it. And it's funny, like, nobody's really asked me that question. But yeah, you, and also it's like, yeah, you get a feel for, like, how, you know, how gingerly you really need to put something down. Also, I think that other people are, this goes back to, like, maybe I'm just reckless. Like, I think other people are a little more, like, afraid for their instruments than I am. I'm a lot more willing, I think, at least now, especially because I worked in a string shop for 8 months, and now I know that, like, cold by itself does not hurt an instrument, like, does not really hurt a cello. I'm, like, a lot more willing to, like, have my cello, like, outside for a little period of time. Not just, like, leave it outside on the street, but, like, if I have to, like, be outside or something. But yeah, apparently I'm a little more loosey-goosey with that than some people are.
It sounds to me, though, like, that experience of, like, working with, because that seems to me like it would be a super fruitful experience as someone that
Like,
understanding
it's,
how.
Yeah, it was a stressful job in many ways, but I learned a lot, for sure. A lot.
But that's the perfect kind of job to only last 8 months.
Yeah. Yeah, it was.
It's enough to put on a resume.
Truth.
Not enough to ruin your life.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
It's a good way to put it.
Yeah. Yep.
I have quite a few of those. Yeah.
Oh my God.
So my original question was more about just kind of like, how do you think about the cello texturally?
You mean like when I'm writing parts and stuff?
Yeah, like with other, what's the word for that? Like,
In like ensemble?
In like voicing, sort
of? I want to say cultures, but that's not right. Like.
Oh.
Like content?
Yeah. Like different ensembles and stuff like that.
Oh, wait. Okay. Sorry. I thought the question was like, okay. So balancing the cello, like, in different ensembles, like, with different people's instruments.
And then I was like, I keep thinking cultures for some reason, and there's a C word. I know it starts with a C that I'm trying to think of. It's not cultures. It has nothing to do with that.
Contexts?
Is that what you're
thinking of? There you go. Okay.
Yes. very similar, right?
Look at that. Yeah. Look at that linguist.
Don't mind me. Yeah. I took some English lit courses.
Just like flip your hair.
Yeah.
Okay. So I mean,
it's a weird question, but
it's so different from because I play new music, but I'm also very into playing like musicals. I play a lot of musicals, and also like depending on the musical. For instance, like when I'm subbing on Hamilton, My role changes from song to song also. So it's like, that took some getting used to. And the I'm trying to think of like more specific, like, like, I feel like my role in generally when I'm playing Hamilton, for instance, is more as like to serve as like a solid like pitch center. I'm sort of like the bass voice of the string quartet, but there is also like literally a bass. So so I'm like sometimes pairing with the bass and sometimes serving as sort of like the, I don't want to say the foundation because that makes me sound real important and I don't like sort of like the like tonal foundation for the quartet, and then sometimes I'm like pairing pair with this like more like rhythmic like gritty kind of stuff with like one of the keyboard books or something. So it's just, it really is like different all the time. And I should say that the person who plays this book regularly is amazing and does all of this like I think probably with the greater fluency than I could ever do. Her name is Tahira Whittington and she's like thebomb.com, and I like, because I just went in to sort of like refresh, like audit the show, like sitting in the pit and just watching her do it again, and I was like, this is like, it's so much more like in her bones than it is like for me, just because I don't play it all the time. But yeah,
she's great. I have a question about, I'm gonna wait because I'm not sure I don't want to like slight Daniel's question.
Oh, okay.
You're good.
I'm good?
Yeah. We don't need to get all like hyper meta and like
I'm not trying to be hyper meta. Anyway, so Daniel and I have a difference of opinion when it comes to Hamilton.
Oh, okay.
I deal with it. I like Hamilton. Uh-huh. Daniel does not.
Okay.
I'm wondering, as a person who has been in the pit, who has played Hamilton, who is intimately familiar with the score, what is your take on Hamilton?
What is my take on Hamilton?
Do you like, do you like Hamilton? Like, do you like Hamilton?
I do like Hamilton.
Yeah.
I really do like Hamilton, actually. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think of, like, if there's anything specifically that I don't like. I enjoy playing the show. And as far as the music goes, I think there are some really interesting moments, like, you know, harmonically, occasionally. Sometimes it's, like, very straightforward. Sometimes, like, you'll hear something, you're like, I don't hear that in musicals all the time. And then obviously the fact that it's like very infused with like a bunch of different styles is very interesting to me. Can I ask what you don't like about it?
I'm glad that you, the reason, because the thing is, it's not that I don't like it.
Do you just think that it's overhyped?
Like, all right. I liked In the Heights. Saw In the Heights. I thought it was great. Mm-hmm. I think that the thing is that I've been reading, like, I had at the time when we, like, were talking about this a lot. For some reason, we talked about this like a couple weeks in a row, like, on QIOs. which is always a space. QIO is a much better space for this kind of a conversation because it's way less, like...
Well, we have in our midst someone who subs for Hamilton, so away we go.
All right. Here. There's a lot of critique on the idea of... using Alexander Hamilton in the way that they use it.
I see. Okay.
Specifically because of his relationship with immigrant folks after he became part of, a nation.
Yes.
So that's a very valuable a thing that when we get into conversations about Hamilton, when we're not with a person that plays for Hamilton and their reputation to tarnish.
And I don't know enough about it to like have a strong opinion about it. So I just, of course, like my perspective is just like, oh, I like the music.
Well, and I think that's the other thing too, is that it's not bad music. The other thing that it is, it's very much, I have a really hard time when folks just kind of like blanket it as like the perfect hip hop opera, because I don't know that, I mean not opera, musical, because I don't know that it necessarily is that either. Like the specific influences are a lot more like reggaeton specifically, and
yeah, there's a lot of different stuff going on. Mm-hmm. It's not just a hip hop musical.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think the idea of folks, because I know folks that are like, oh, I don't like hip hop, but you know what, I liked Hamilton. That always really rubs me the wrong way, because like, well,
I feel like they listen to some like top 40 rap and they're like meh, and then they listen to Hamilton and they're like, oh, I like it, and it's like, whoa, like, okay, there's so much more. Like, yeah, there's so much more.
and I think because Hamilton has such a strong Broadway reputation, mm-hmm. and because of the fact that it is very groundbreaking,
yeah,
I think that it can really, it's really easy for specifically like white folks that don't like black people music to get behind it.
Yeah, I think they're like, ugh, now it's like something that the people of color are putting out that I can like feel okay about. Yeah. And then like, look, I'm supporting something that's like with people of color.
Yeah.
I could definitely see that for sure.
And I think we got, and then all, and I'm really glad to have this moment, because I feel like we've gotten into a couple things and we had like a couple people write into the show and be like, Daniel, how dare you? And like all of a sudden I was like backed into an ideological corner where I was like, no, it's racist.
Oh, man.
Anyway.
Yeah. No, there are many conversations that could be had about Hamilton and about for musicals and about kinds of people who go to see musicals and all of that. But
is Odd Pod an explicit show?
It's like, I mean, it's marked as explicit just so that I could stop censoring myself.
Right. Well, that's kind of where I'm always interested in that, because I think that it's a weird decision you have to make.
Right. I'm like, I mean, you're like, because you have to, like, you market it, but you're like, we're not just dropping F-bombs every 2 seconds,
right,
but like, we want to be able to.
Yeah, and I think we played a game in the first couple weeks after we marked it explicit, we were like, well, let's earn it.
Yeah. Let's make it worth the little E.
Right.
There's one episode where in the description it says, and Maureen earns our explicit rating.
Oh my God.
Because I think I was talking about faux feminism. And it
was, God. And so you were just like, all right.
I think at one point I called it like, I don't know. I started calling it faux feminism, and then I ended up calling it skinny white girl feminism, and then it just got really, I was like, and you know what? Fuck these women who are just like going out and getting brunch and not caring about anybody else but
eating fucking brunch. Oh my God. That's amazing.
It was really
going out and getting brunch. That's fair.
Yeah.
I
stand by that.
Yeah, I think you should.
I don't like brunch.
You know what? I like the food associated with brunch, but
sure.
I don't, you know what? Like, I'm not the kind of person who's like, let's get mimosas, like, every single Sunday. Like, usually I have things to do.
That's the thing. You know, I could really be a brunch person if it wasn't such a rich people activity.
Right.
Like, no, I can't afford it.
For
like,
it's for people who have normal jobs and normal hours, right, and they have nothing to do on a Sunday.
Yeah.
Well, and, I don't know, what kills me is, like, it's so, and you mentioned this, it's so expensive.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And I always, whenever I do get brunch, I always feel so sick later.
Because it's so heavy.
Yeah. My favorite brunch is at, like, a shitty diner.
That's
like, that's my ideal brunch, is, like, someplace
where shitty diner brunch?
I don't feel like I should be fashionable. I don't generally feel that way, but just in general, I just want to be comfortable all the time.
Yeah, I think when I had to make the decision of like what kind of career in music I was going to have, that was my, I was like, I don't want to wear suits. Fuck that. Ever. I don't want to ever wear a suit.
I only want to wear a suit if it's like purple and fabulous or something. Like, I don't
or like I'm being honored by like a museum,
right?
Or
exactly.
Yeah.
Like you're like, then I'll put on a suit.
If you were being honored by a museum, would you put on a suit?
If everybody else is wearing suits,
I would need you to have like a splash of like a wild pattern or a color.
Oh,
like
The problem is, it's affording it, man. I don't mind,
well, Daniel, and I don't mean to world, keep, like... In the world of getting honored by a museum, surely you could afford a suit.
Yeah. I really like my... I have a gray suit that mm-hmm. I like. I have, like, a... the idea of a corduroy suit is very fun to me. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That would be fun.
Yeah. I do like me a funky suit.
Daniel's got an old man aesthetic.
I mean, that's fair.
It's a good one, though.
I found my...
when you're like 40, oh man,
it's gonna be peak. Yeah.
You'll really like hit your stride.
Oh yeah. Oh, Daniel. Really. Daniel in his 40s.
It's gonna be living.
Yep. I fucking hope so. What's the editing process like for you?
An iPod. I generally just like, okay, so like I take my files that I took off of my H4N and put them on my computer, and then I plug them into GarageBand, and because I'm working with GarageBand, I just like, there's the same sort of like, you know, vocal filter that I put on it to sort of boost it a little bit. And sometimes I mess with the EQ like slightly. I try to mess with it as little as possible, obviously. It's the problem that I have is that sometimes people really like back off of the mic and
for sure.
And I don't, and I laugh really loudly. And so it's kind of a problem when like somebody's like, and I'm like, like, you know, and
yeah.
So I have to like reconcile those two like very different levels of sound. And so that's like the main challenge that I have is literally just my laugh versus other people's normal voices.
Mm-hmm.
And occasionally, like most, like if I'm cutting something out, it's almost always like if I went on a stupid tangent that I feel like doesn't add anything, mm-hmm. I pretty much never like cut out something that like somebody else said, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Unless they're like, oh, and then last week when I went to the Nazi rally.
Right.
And you definitely cut that out.
Yeah, I think there was like one time when somebody said something where I was like, that could be construed in a way that they did not mean it, but I just, it was like such a small little moment that I was like, you know what, we're just gonna cut that. It doesn't add or take it. Like, it just,
right.
It only happened one time, and it was like, it was very much like a borderline thing where it might have been fine, but it might not have. And I, mm-hmm. you know, I didn't want people to like get the, you know, not to like, not that I'm like censoring people right and left,
right.
but it's like, I just didn't want people to get up in arms, like, not, you know, all five people who listen to my podcast, but like, but like, I didn't want there to be like inflammation when there didn't need to be inflammation.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah. For sure. No, and I, the reason I asked too is not to like, the thing that's interesting for me is, as a, like, you know, we put ours out so quickly, and so I do very little. Like, for me, it's just, like, pretty much, like, very similar, mm-hmm. in fact, actually, where it's just pretty much bumping up the voice.
Mm-hmm. And I used to add these sort of, like, a what I called, like, a header and a footer as well, where I would, like, go back and, like, explain a little bit about the person, and then, like, put a little thing at the end where I was like, thanks for listening, like, we'll be back at this time and this day. And then after, you know, this season, in quotes, I just sort of, like, nixed that, and ever since then, I've just been like, all right, it's like, the levels are fine, I'm gonna throw it up.
They're yeah.
just, like, very, like, bare minimum editing, for sure.
Yeah, when we started it, I was like, yeah, fuck it, no intro. And I feel pretty good about the decision, I think.
Yeah, I think I started listening to, like, enough podcasts where there wasn't much of an intro, except for maybe, like, their little, like, you know, a little, did you ever listen to, like, what is it called? Is it, And That's Why We Drink? Or And This Is Why We Drink? It's one of those mm-mm. where it's, like, it's just basically, like, two women, like, doing research on, like, scary ghost stories or, like, murderers or something. And so they have, like, their little introductory, like, glass clink. And that's, like, the only introduction, really, that there is. Mm. And so I was like, you know what? I don't think I need anything aside from my little, like, music clips.
Yeah.
The beginning and the end.
There's another podcast that they only do 20-minute episodes, but they are, like, masterpieces, and it's like a poetry podcast. It's called Make No Bones. Fantastic podcast. He lived in Chicago for a really long time and is his grad or his doctorate in Iowa. And we had him on the show, I think. His name's Toby Altman.
We definitely had him on the show.
He's a poet, but I learned this after listening to his podcast. He makes all the music for the show. They do a little intro for every episode, and he talks about the person that he's featuring and all this stuff.
Yeah.
And I that's awesome to me, but also just like, man, I'm so impatient and I want to release stuff, so I could never do that.
You guys also have massive output. You just release stuff so much more than I just couldn't handle it.
Well,
we barely.
It's amazing. It's amazing.
The only reason we do is because the editing is so little. It's literally just me going and doing compressing some stuff, and then mm-hmm. otherwise, if I paid any attention to detail at all, oh my god.
No. When we first started this out, I cannot emphasize to you how easy it was when we first started. Before we started thinking about monetizing anything or stuff like that, it was just we got our equipment for free because we found it in my mom's attic, and we were we could just do this indefinitely because it was just fun.
You had the tools.
It was to just do
whatever you wanted.
Before we started producing events and all of that stuff, we were we could just do, this is literally costing us nothing. But then once we started producing stuff. But, that's how easy it was in the beginning.
Yeah.
Once we had all the systems in place and
stuff
like that.
It is amazing, what a democratized platform it is. It's kind of awesome.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's really... Yeah, that's actually a really great way to put it. Is that it's such a podcasting in general.
I love it.
Yeah. Cool. Well, we have a few minutes left. So the last thing we do with all of our guests is a 1-minute plug for anything they have upcoming.
Oh my gosh.
Okay. We also love hearing about, and so it doesn't have to be just a minute. We love hearing about other folks that you want to maybe shout out that are doing dope work and self-care stuff, TV shows, books, movies that you're paying attention to.
Oh man. Okay. Well, I'll just plug my EP one more time. It's Restless Lady, 6-track EP that comes out, November 21st. It's a Tuesday. I believe that was the sort of general release date before it became Friday in this country.
Nice.
And then there was now that it's Friday and everybody's releasing their shit on Friday, I was like, well, now it's too crowded and everybody else is releasing their shit then. So I'm releasing it on a Tuesday. And if you want to listen to the single that's out, it's called Witch. And also, you want to search under the name Audrey Q.
Yeah,
that's sort of my fake pop star name. Which is Audrey Q.
I'll make sure to tag specifically your Facebook page, because that's Audrey Q, right?
Thank you. Yes, yeah. Yes it is. Yeah, yeah. What else do I have going on? I'm playing with Zaffa Collective. Members of Zaffa Collective, we're playing with Chicago Fringe Opera. We're doing the opera as one. The music is by Laura Kaminsky. We're doing it at Center on Halsted. You could check out the Zaffa Collective website or Chicago Fringe Opera and find tickets there. It's going to be next week. Is that next week?
I think it's coming up, right?
It's the 16th, 17th, 18th, and 19th. It is those days.
Yeah.
Wow. I believe. Is that next week? Yes. Yes. Yes, it is.
Next weekend.
Yes. Damn. Holy shit. So we're doing that. And I don't know who's gonna be next on my podcast. We'll find out. I'm very much flying by the seat of my pants.
No, you deserve that.
Anything else that's coming up? I'm blanking on everything. I'm so sorry.
Oh, that's okay.
I have Audrey has a cold brain.
Where can people find your podcast?
Oh, I don't have a website for it, but the Odd Pod, my podcast is named Odd Pod, just to reiterate.
A-U-D-P-O-D.
Yes, exactly. It's like mm-hmm. odd, like my name, Audrey.
mm-hmm. And audio, and...
Oh, yeah. no, trust me, I did think of that. it's called Odd Pod, and you can listen to it on iTunes, like on the podcast like app and all that. There is technically a website for it, but I never really push that. I try to get people to listen on iTunes.
I highly recommend checking out Radio Public. It was really, easy for us to get. I think it's an Android app, too. But what it is specifically is they make embeddable players.
Oh, my
And nice ones. So if you look on our site...
That's amazing.
The embedded like thing we have automatically updates with the most recent episode, and it looks nice because like I don't know if you've like tried to embed podcasts. It's fucking impossible,
right
up until they
and the iTunes ones, like you can't do it with iTunes.
It's like what are you thinking, Apple? Get your shit together.
They make everything else look so nice, yep. And that one element of their empire is just garbage.
Yep.
It's terrible,
for real, for fucking real.
Yeah, for sure.
Cool. I'm sorry I cut you off.
No, I mean, I think that's like all I have. I mean, I'm playing a show at Columbia College in December.
Dude, you're so busy. That's awesome.
The show is called Caroline or Change. They're doing it just with their...
Oh, I know that show.
You know it? Yeah, see, I wasn't familiar with it at all before I started learning it. I was like, what's happening?
Yeah, my friend Zoe helped start a theater company in Baltimore, and they did that.
Oh, okay. Show. It's an interesting show. It's like this black woman, Caroline, who's working for a Jewish family, and like the fact that they are a Jewish family is like a big part of the show. At least I think so. And they live in Louisiana, and it's like during the 60s, like right around when JFK is assassinated, and there's just a lot going on in it. But yeah, so that's an interesting show. That's happening in December. You can see it like at Columbia College, and so yeah. Those are the highlights.
Oh my god.
but yeah. I think that's about it.
Cool.
Well, thank you all so much for listening. I've been Daniel Johansson.
I continue to be Maureen Smith.
If you want to keep up with what we are up to, there are so many ways that you can do that. You can head over to scopymag.com. That's our website. We post all of our articles there.
Daniel
we
sounds actually like he's have... trying to seduce us.
It's working.
I'm so sorry. I interrupted your spiel.
You're totally fine. Every time I do that spiel, Maureen does the slow down, you crazy person, because I like just bat out of hell. Where the fuck was I?
Scopymag.com.
That's our articles. Our website. We have all. We actually have a bunch of new articles up that I'm really excited about. That have been doing really well. If you haven't had a chance to keep an eye on what we're publishing, I would do that because there's just like a lot of stuff going up all the time. So do head to scopymag.com and check that out. Otherwise, you can find us in all the social media places. On Facebook, we're under Scopy Magazine. On Instagram, Twitter, Tumblr, Google Play, Radio Public, and iTunes Podcasts, we are under Scopy Mag, and we spell that S-C-A-P-I-M-A-G.
And as always, I'm here to emphasize the importance of donations. We run on a shoestring budget. Everything that we've been able to do up to this point has been through your generosity. So first of all, thank you so much. Second of all, we could use a little bit more help. If you're in a position to give, you can head to our website, scopymag.com, go to our About section. There are a couple ways that you can give. First is you can do a one-time donation. So if you choose to do that, you will have our eternal gratitude. If you choose to give on a monthly level, some cool things will happen. First of all, our next two donors at any level will receive a free bag of Halfwit coffee. At $10 a month, you'll receive one free session per month of studio photography by Daniel in our space. And at $25 a month, you will be a part of our affiliate program. We are grateful to... Oh, nope, messed that up. You'll be a part of our affiliate program. We believe that such generosity during this time deserves recognition. So Our affiliates will be featured on our website with a link to their website or social media as a means of advertisement, and will receive a Scoppy affiliate window sticker. So, give a little, give a lot, and if you can't give, then listen, participate, and share.
Cool. Thanks again so much for listening. Go out and make something.
Yep.